Good morning. Welcome in. It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arkin, Mego, Shime Time here as well, taking you up until 1 o'clock. No Patriots today as they are on their bye week. And since they're on their bye week, Mego and Shime, hi, by the way.
Hello.
How are we doing today?
Hi. I just drove down from a winter wonderland in Maine.
Nice.
There's like significant snow up there.
You drove right from Maine to here.
I drove from Portland to here.
Commitment.
And there's like already at least 4 or 5 inches of snow up there.
Hmm.
And I was like, all right, I guess thanks for the weather report. I checked it last night because I was like, let me make sure in case I need to get up early, clean off the car and, you know, take it a little slow on the highway or anything. And no, it just said snow early morning, no accumulation. And I get out there and I'm like, of course.
There is accumulation.
There's been accumulation.
Significant accumulation. But my nephew did wake up and say this is the best day ever. Because there was snow.
Well, there you go.
That was sweet.
And it is, you know, I'm glad there's snow. We need snow. It's too many winters in a row with no snow. I'm tired of it.
And it's been really cold, like bone-chillingly cold the last few days. So without snow, it feels kind of worthless.
Yeah, agreed. Anyways, there is, as I said, no Patriots game today. But because it is the bye week, we are going to do our best to take stock of what has been an interesting season here for you New England Patriots, 13 weeks in as we approach the final month of the season. A tough month for the team as all four of their games are against playoff teams, two against Buffalo, one against the LA Chargers, and of course one against the Arizona Cardinals, who are playing an interesting game today against Seattle that we'll get to later when we do our picks and look around the NFL. We'll do some fantasy stuff for you as well. We will be talking with all of our guests today, except for Coach Wiggy. There's no game, so there's no keys to the game.
Correct.
But
Makes
we do
sense.
Have something in store. I have something in store for you two, Shime and Mego.
I'm
so
nervous.
Get ready for
I'm
that.
I'm excited.
I'm nervous.
It should be a lot of fun. You should be both nervous and excited.
Okay.
I'd say those are both appropriate responses.
Trust Perfect. Falls with the Christmas tree.
to what Let's we're doing it. Here. We will also have the emotional polar coaster. Mego, with that, that'll be coming your way in about a half hour or so. But right now, let's go ahead and open up with a very basic question about this Patriots season. Is this Patriots season going the way you thought it would? That's it. You can take that any way you want to. Is this, through 13 weeks, is this where you thought this team would be? Has the season gone the way you thought it would? And that could be about Drake May, Jerod Mayo, the offense, the defense, whatever you want. Mego, has this season gone the way you thought it would?
Absolutely not. And I didn't have high hopes for this team. I was not delusional thinking that they were going to make the playoffs or anything like that. But I thought we were going to be looking at a team that was more competent on game day than what we've seen with the last couple Belichick teams. And I thought that we'd see a quarterback who got in midseason, which is about when he got in, struggled and looked raw at first, and then towards the end of the season, we got to look at each other and say, hey, this is a team with a good defense, and this quarterback is really talented, and he's starting to get it, and I feel hopeful about the direction where they're going if they just add a little talent here, and I like what Jerod Mayo's doing. Instead, it's like the opposite of all of that. I love Drake May from the jump. He's looked great for, I'd say, 90% of his playing time out there, just exceeded every expectation I had for him, and I'm fully disappointed by every other part of the operation. Just completely disappointed. And so in a weird way, Drake May has, again, exceeded all my expectations, but the rest of the operation there, it's very difficult to feel hopeful going into the offseason and looking ahead at next season because everything else is just a mess and it feels like you're starting from scratch yet again.
Yeah, coming into this season, I felt like they would start a little rocky and then pick up steam really in that Jaguars, Jets, Titans, Bears, Rams, Dolphins, Colts stretch, and they just didn't. They won two of those games where I thought they could have probably come away with 3, 4, or even 5 before the season started. I was like, oh yeah, Drake May by that time will be locked in. He'll be ready to go. But they didn't start Drake May until that Houston Texans game. And so it's been a, he's been figuring things out, but he's been awesome and a lot of fun. But a team that I felt like towards the end of the season was going to gain momentum so that next year you might fight for a wild card spot no longer seems realistic, especially with who you have left on the schedule. Like, I just don't see that. And so for me, it becomes a disappointment because you are terrible in the margins. You have zero aggression on offense, even though your quarterback is by far the best player you have on your team. And I have zero faith in the coaching staff and or the front office to evaluate any form of talent whatsoever. So it's like, all right, here we go. Drake May is like the new Matthew Stafford in Detroit, and we're just going to be miserable even though he's awesome. Like, that sounds horrendous.
Well, and you mentioned the lack of urgency on offense, But the urgency that you show on defense is just nonsensical.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Mm. Like, the blitz schemes that you bring
don't
make
any sense.
Let's zero
blitz Matthew Stafford.
It's very odd.
Literally won an NFC championship game against Tom Brady because they zero blitzed him. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Didn't make a lot of sense when that happened. Didn't make a lot of sense not putting Christian Gonzalez on their best wide receiver. I mean, there's a lot of defensive questions that you could have over the course of the season. I think both of you guys were very optimistic coming into the season.
I agree.
More so than I was. I'm maybe more naturally skeptical and cynical than you two, which is my own cross to bear. But this season's going about how I thought it would. And when I go back to how I was reacting to the drafting of Drake May or the drafting of any quarterback this offseason, I feel very vindicated in all of my fears. I know I was wrong about Drake May and how good he'd be because, like, he's better than I thought I was, right? Like, I didn't think he was going to be that good. I thought he'd be a raw sort of project that you had to bring along and that he wouldn't pop right away and he wouldn't be considered this promising young quarterback. He'd be still very much a project. That was sort of my big whiff when it came to Drake May. But when it came to everything else involving this team, this environment, this organization, this setting for a quarterback to grow and get better, I feel 100% vindicated on all of those fears that I had. 100%. I didn't think that you had the coaching infrastructure to bring along a rookie QB like this, especially a 22-year-old.
Correct.
I didn't think you had the offensive line.
Correct.
And you didn't go out and do much about it, aside from, you know, pick up a couple terrible free agents and draft guys out of position. And the wide receiver room, as bad as it was last year, I didn't think really got any better.
Correct.
Jalen Polk, when he got drafted, I thought, this guy's not really the name that popped when I was going over all the wide receivers that we were thinking about and looking at here. He was the second best guy on that Washington team behind Adunze, and he's been an absolute disaster, an absolute mess. And so when I take all that into consideration and I look at all those things that I was afraid of early on in the year, we're at week 13 and all of that came true. All of that came true about as dramatically as you could possibly think. The coaching staff is in pretty much well over their head, I'd say. The wide receiver room got worse from last year, which is amazing. And the offensive line has just been dreadful. And all of those things, I think, haven't necessarily turned Drake May into a puddle, and that's credit to him. And that's another thing I was wrong about. I thought this would all be part of a system that ended up ruining the kid. You know, it was like Mac Jones, only much quicker than it happened with Mac Jones. And that hasn't happened. Drake May has been a stud. Drake May has been proving a lot of people wrong, like me. But when it comes to the team, and when it comes to what I was more concerned about, I think that they check every box. I mean, really, every single one of those boxes of fears have all been realized. And I think that for better or for worse, and we'll see what happens with May and his career, and we'll see if they ever actually surround him with the type of weapons and the type of offensive line and coaches and whatever else that he needs in order to be a successful and maybe even special quarterback in this league. Right now, I think that this is hurting him. I do. I think that there's a lot of other examples of teams all across the NFL, like the Washington Commanders, who are certainly no shining city on a hill when it comes to other teams trying.
Even the Denver Broncos.
The Denver Broncos.
I mean, they've been awesome, and their offense is, outside of the offensive line, very spotty across the board.
Yeah. Even the Chicago Bears, who I don't think are any good, but I do kind of like them this weekend. They fired their coach. They fired their offensive coordinator. They have talent around their quarterback, and I think that if they get the right guys in place to coach, that thing could be off and humming next year, no problem. I don't feel that way about the Patriots, and I think that that's sort of where we are right now, is that it's good to get the quarterback, and it's good to have a guy there because you could miss on quarterbacks for years and years and years. We saw the other three teams in the AFC East do it for 20 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the guys that they drafted, all the coaches that they brought in, over and over again, just failing to compete with Brady and the Patriots. And now here we are. You're in a position where you have a quarterback that everyone believes in, and everything else is just collapsing around him.
And that's,
I think, very dangerous.
I think what's scary about that, Arcan, is that they talk about this evaluation period that they're in now for the last mm-hmm. couple weeks. And when you listen to Jerod Mayo, he says that he's got to find out what he has in the rookie offensive linemen and Polk and Baker. And that's what you want to hear. You're thinking, okay, put the young guys in there and get a sense of where you have to draft and use your free agency and trade and everything. But then you look at the people doing the evaluation, and we talked about this last week, Shime. It's like, well, do you even trust the evaluators?
Yeah.
Whether it's the coaches who may or may not be here next year around Jerod Mayo, or Elliot Wolf, who told you that Chukwuma Okorafor was going to be fine as starting left tackle, and he lasted for 12 snaps of the season,
or even above them. The ownership, are you confident in their ability to evaluate anybody?
We'll get to that in Polar Coaster, but I'm just, that's the scary thing to me, is it's not just a talent deficiency, and it's not just, oof, maybe it's the wrong guys on the coaching staff. It's both. And do you actually have the solution in-house, or even the way to find the solution in-house? That's what the scariest part of it is to me.
Yeah, and it's just, you put a guy in charge who had never been in charge of anything at any level. Like, Jerod Mayo...
What are you talking about? Because it's literally everybody on the staff at every place.
Right. You know what? You're right. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Jerod Mayo.
I think even more importantly, though, like, Jerod Mayo has just... You put him in charge. He had never been a head coach. I mean, he had barely been a defensive coordinator in the NFL. Never been a head coach at any level in his life. And... You put him in such a position to fail. You gave him very little talent to work with on the actual football team. You gave him very little experience on the other coaching staff and in the front office. And it's just like, you had zero intentions of actually trying to succeed post-Belichick. And if you thought this is what it would take to succeed, then Lord knows we are in for a nightmare going forward, because this was not even close to enough to have any kind of success in the league.
We always, well, I don't know if we all do, but we have at certain points this season accused Jerod Mayo of coaching scared, right? He coaches scared. He's
big time.
He doesn't want to take chances. He doesn't want to, you know, sort of go for
it
on fourth down. I think you could say the same thing about the Crafts. The Crafts own the team in a scared kind of way. They don't want to go outside of their little bubble. They don't want to go outside of their group of people that they know and their Rolodex. They don't want to take a chance on an offense, you know, just spending a lot of money on one of these younger offensive coordinators. They let guys walk.
Do you think it's scared, or do you think it's that they just don't know how, because Belichick did it for 25
years? That's what I think it is.
Well, what was Belichick? He was a guy who was part of Parcells' group. I mean, they all, it's been going on since before then.
Yeah, but he took care of everything else. Like, the Crafts literally didn't have to lift a finger.
But even he was someone that they knew. You see what I'm saying? Like, he was someone that was part of the group, and that, you know, you just kind of promote from with that. Well, we know him. This is one of our guys.
Like, it's a good point.
We want to go with this. Yeah.
They want the trusted asset. They want to know, like, oh, we
very similar to what Belichick did with his coordinator.
It might in part be because of this whole idea of getting the franchise back, and it's our, oh, Bill really took over everything, but now it's our franchise and we have it back in our hands. But Chaim, I think it's a good point to bring up that because they were a year early on the plan of getting Belichick out the door, that then they turn around and the only connections that they found themselves having in other parts of the league were Green Bay and Cleveland, and that's not exactly where you want to be plucking talent from for your all the areas that they needed filled.
Yeah, you need to be willing to reach outside of that circle of trust. And so I think in large part, like, there are a lot of scared aspects to the management of the team. Mm. But I think there's also just like a lot of we don't know what we're doing aspects. Everybody from top to bottom has no clue what the bleep they're doing. And I think that's the most infuriating thing, because it's not when you're bad, you're just bad. And it is what it is. But this is, at times, it feels incompetence. And that, to me, is what is the most terrifying thing about the New England Patriots.
This isn't like punting on one season.
No.
It's like a muffed punt on the season. And you're like, great, well, now, like, what the hell now? What are you doing? Did we just go backwards?
We don't even have the ball anymore. Like, it's like, what are we doing?
They just scored a touchdown, right? They just blocked it and they ran in the end zone.
You're like, great, now it's worse. Good job.
The WEEI football show on Sundays brought to you by Cars for Kids. Join the Cars for Kids 30th anniversary celebration. They're giving away one kid's ride on every car every day for a year. To enter, send a video of your child singing their jingle at carsforkids.org/30. We've got a lot to get to here today on this bye week, as we do an autopsy so far of the first 13 weeks of this Patriots season. We got the emotional polar coaster, which will involve the Crafts and their stewardship of the coming offseason. We'll get to that as well. Fitzy joins the show at 45. Tommy Curran, Andy Hart. We also will have Pop, Lock, and Drop later on in the show. We'll go around the NFL, get your inactives, and get you caught up on everything going around in the world of football. First, here's Chris Schein with What's Trending. WEEI Football Sunday, Christian Arcan, Mego, Shime Time here. Your phone calls at 617-779-7937. That's also the number you can use to text the show if you would like to do that. No more 37937. You just text the same number that you call, and boom, pops right up on the text line. We don't have a game today, so we do have a little bit more room for you here if you'd like to chime in on anything that's gone on over the first 13 weeks of this Patriots season, which is what we're starting with here. And as we get to the emotional polar coaster, Mego, the upcoming season in the offseason in particular. What do we got today?
Yeah, I thought that bye week, a good time for reflection. There's not a whole lot of other news unless you're tuning into Bill Belichick to UNC potential, which has a lot of chatter this morning. I'm sure we'll get to. But for the Patriots in particular, I put this out. How much do you trust? How much? Well, and this is good. I typed this at 7 a.m. How much trust do you have in the Kraft stewardship in the coming offseason? And the options there were a lot, some less than before, and very little. And of course, very little ran away with it. 63% of about 1,000 respondents say they have very little trust in the Kraft's operation in the offseason. And again, thank you for bearing with my grammatical mistakes. That was the first thing I did.
How much do you trust do you have?
Yep.
Nice. Yeah, that's some interesting grammar
this
right there.
This is what happens when you do this first thing in the morning after you went to the Kenny Bunkport Prelude and drank hot whiskey all yesterday.
Ooh, the Kenny Bunkport whiskey. Prelude, that sounds very hoity-toity.
It's not.
What is
it's
it?
For everybody.
Is it?
Yeah, it's just another, you know, like a Christmas festival.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
There was a hat parade.
A hat parade?
Yeah.
Like cool hats?
Okay, so we just...
No, no one had hats.
We just bought stupid hats to wear and you parade down Main Street, but people get like really into it. People made really elaborate hats. Some of the hats were spinning.
Were there any of those giant baseball hats?
No. Oh, yeah. Those are
great. That's like so 2 years ago. Oh,
those are great, though.
Anyway, some less than before. That's my answer. That got 32%. Only 5% of respondents say that they have a lot of trust in the stewardship from the Crafts.
You said some less than before. Why is that?
Some less than before because I don't know how you don't have less trust than before after going through this season and seeing all the decisions that they and then the decision makers that they put in place, the decisions those people made for the future of your organization. I think that they really need to make some changes this offseason around not just talent, not just spending money, which people were already skeptical about with them, but making changes with who they have in place in the staff to regain the trust of people. And I think the biggest thing that they have to do, we just heard Gerard Mayo with Tom Curran from Tom Curran's Patriots Talk podcast there. If they're going to move forward with Gerard Mayo, which I think they will for a second season, the most important change that they can make aside from bringing more talent into the roster is bringing people with institutional knowledge around him. Because you can't have this many people learning on the job, and you need somebody to act as a mentor to him. You need somebody to be an Ernie Adams type. You need all these collections, a Bears type. Like, Bill didn't do it himself, especially in the beginning. He had so many people around him supporting him, and it does feel like, even aside from the poor situation that they put Gerard Mayo in to start with the state of the roster and everything else in the front office, he's just kind of on an island there.
Well, I think that's also, too, in part because Bill had already been a coach in the league for so long before he became the head coach here, like being the defensive coordinator in New York and then a head coach in Cleveland and a coordinator here and like all of those different things.
He didn't have to be propped up.
No, he had a he didn't need as much help as Mayo does. He also had a much larger pool of contacts when it came to supporting himself with good coaches like Romeo Crennel and Charlie Weiss and Dante Scarnecchia, all those guys. Like, he already knew all these guys, so he's like, yeah, come work for me. Whereas Mayo has never been anywhere but this organization. He's only been a coach for, 5 years? And that was a linebacker's coach into a semi-half defensive coordinator. Like, he just doesn't have the experience, know-how, and or Rolodex that Bill Belichick had when he started here. And so it is even more imperative on ownership to help him with other people and talent on the field. And yet none of that has happened.
And I know it's not a one-to-one because the bigger part of what this organization I'm about to talk about did was add even more talent to an already talented roster. But it is a little bit like the Celtics situation with Joe Mazzulla, where they just wanted consistency at that position, and Brad Stevens really believed in Joe Mazzulla and his ability as a coach. So they bring in a lot of assistant coaches and Jeff Van Gundy, and it's people with institutional knowledge again and who have a lot more experience. And you could look at them and say, well, why don't you make that guy the head coach instead of Joe Mazzulla? But it worked. And I don't see why you don't go and spend money on people and do something like that with Gerard Mayo.
How did you vote, Jen?
I voted on, what was the bottom option again? Very little.
Very little.
Yes, okay. Very little.
I also voted very little. And I think that if you look at this offseason here, I didn't see one single person, one national person, local person, anybody, who was really impressed with the way the Crafts handled the Belichick departure, first of all, into the hiring and sort of succession plan that we now see today. I don't think anybody really looked at it and thought, wow, that was very shrewd, the hiring of this guy or bringing in that guy. Like, yeah, I wouldn't have thought of that. That was really some outside-the-box thinking there by the Kraft family. I think this was about as paint-by-numbers as it gets. You made your decision 5 years ago on a trip to, that was the entire hiring process, was a trip to another country where he sat across from the aisle and they had a great time. I don't even really, every time I hear about that trip to Israel, the only thing that, the story that keeps coming back up was how there was like a delay in the flight. They were in the airport and Mayo started like a Q&A session with everybody about what they liked and didn't like about the trip. And I'm just like, what about that? What about that was so impressive that you were like, man, this guy's got to coach my team. This little Q&A in the airport right now where we're all sitting around waiting for our connecting flight over at Hudson Newsstand or whatever, like this is so impressive, so amazing, the way he's commanding this group, that I've got to make him my head coach, and I'm going to do it 5 years in advance, and I'm going to do it at the expense of the greatest coach in the history of the sport and blah, 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 like all of that. Every time I hear or read about that, it gets more and more absurd, right? Like, it's sort of an absurd story and an absurd way to go about continuing what was the greatest dynasty in professional sports. A 20-year dynasty, which you should have been able, even Joe Montana, you know, and Joe Montana and the Niners, when that was over, they had someone waiting in the wings. And they got lucky with Steve Young. It's a little bit different. But you kind of make your own luck sometimes. The Patriots made their luck this way. They went out of their way not to go by who's performing well, who's a name that's on the horizon, who's any of this. They went with a name that they knew. They went with someone that was already in their building, someone that they liked, and that was it. That was the only standard that you had to hit, the only prerequisite that you had to hit for this hiring process, and that's insane. And with that, I mean, how can you trust anything going forward?
The most galling part of the whole thing is, okay, let's say that is when they made the decision. 5 years ago, they go, Jerod Mayo, look how he commands an audience. Look how people believe in him in this Hudson News at an airport. We love this guy. He is the future. Why not develop him? Like, why not spend the next 5 years doing everything you can to develop him as your next head coach, to think about what you're going to do when those 5 years are up with your front office? Because it's not like Bill is just leaving as a head coach.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't you do everything you could do to get him experience on the offensive side of the ball, too? Oh, you can't, because Belichick's there.
Exactly.
But at the same time, it's as if they did absolutely nothing, and they weren't even going to start thinking about how that was going to look until the second year of Belichick's contract was up, which is just a ridiculous way to think about the future if you've already made a decision on somebody.
And that's why you shouldn't ever in football be predetermining who your next head coach is going to be. It just doesn't work that way. This is not the monarchy of England.
Right.
You cannot just determine, yes, he's the next king. That's how it's going to be. No, that's not how it works. Because you want to know something? If you had hired Mike Vrabel in this offseason cycle, or, you know, just done interviews with people, and been like, you know, Vrabel was a pillar of our organization for many years, just like Jerod Mayo, won a lot of Super Bowls here, just like Jerod Mayo, is a leader of men, just like Jerod Mayo, and has, oh, I don't know, a pretty good record in the NFL with crappy quarterback play, which Jerod Mayo absolutely doesn't have. You would have just known. It's like, well, this guy's resume is way better.
But they decided five years ago, and they didn't even adjust because they didn't think that Vrabel would be out there.
But that's the issue.
It's crazy.
Like, you cannot, especially in football, this is not something that you can just make into some kind of dynastic succession plan where you can pick and choose the next leader 5 years in advance. That's not how it works, because the guy currently in charge is not going to help you set up the guy being the next head coach, unless, of course, it's Bill Belichick's kid.
If anything, he would Brett Favre it and try to block him from developing anything.
Because
it's like, I'm just going to hand this over to you while they fire my ass in front of everybody?
Which I wouldn't be shocked may have happened while Bill was here.
Well, they weren't
and that's
even
one of the reasons
Jerod
Mayo.
Year.
Yeah, one of the reasons why Jerod Mayo knows nothing about anything.
Yeah, that's all very fair. We remember when Josh McDaniel left for the Colts and then came back,
mm-hmm.
and there was that whole thing about how Bill was going to groom him to be the next head coach. Never happened.
Nope.
Never came close to that. And I don't know exactly what they did, what they said to Josh to get him to bail on Indy and come back here. But whatever it was convincing enough, and then it didn't come to fruition. So I think that with Bill, there was a lot of... I don't know, defensiveness when it came to his position,
yeah,
sort of knowing.
Yeah, the only person that he would have done that for would have been one of his sons.
Right.
Steven.
And
that's who it would have been.
Or Brian.
Yeah, I guess. But it seems like
he's about to do that.
Yeah, it seems like he's trying to do it for Steven over and over again.
And even that is a bit of a stretch. Yep. Like, even that I could see being a succession situation with, like, Kendall Roy and Logan Roy.
But
where it's
honestly,
like, I'm going to give it over to you, and then, actually, I got two more years of me.
Honestly, though, if
complete
it
with the young girlfriend who comes in,
yes!
right? Now all of a sudden he's back on the...
Carrie!
Yeah.
If it had been Steven, though, could it have been worse than with Gerard Mayo this year? I think it might have been better.
I think it could be worse.
It could have been worse, sure.
It could definitely be worse.
I mean, I
don't know.
Your quarterback could be a mess.
I mean, it
depends. But it's already a mess around him, and he's not falling apart.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It could be worse. Your quarterback could also be part of the mess.
It's just Steve Belichick, the head coach, and everything else is the same, or it's
Belichick's
staff picks
the fallout from that. Like, so Steve Belichick's in charge, and then the fallout from that is he makes his staff pick. So it could be Josh McDaniels' offensive coordinator, for all I know.
Well.
It could be any of those. Like, he has the Belichick Rolodex. It's... Look,
the Belichick Rolodex got him 4 wins last year, so it's not like that's some great thing.
No, I am aware, but like at least he has contacts that clearly Gerard Mayo does not. And also, he was the one calling the plays on defense last year where Gerard Mayo was not, and the defense was good last year where it sucks so bad this year.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I'm just thinking about the Steve Belichick press conferences that we get if he was the head coach.
The memes with the tongues and these facial expressions.
Friday,
yeah,
Steve Belichick would be the wildest ride.
Oh, I can't imagine. Monday morning, Steve Belichick with the Greg Hill Show would have made my week every week.
Oh, yeah.
There's a parallel universe where that's happening.
That would be amazing!
Yeah, like another timeline where, like, Biff got the almanac and he's, like, a billionaire and, like, you know, here's Steve Belichick, head coach of the Patriots. Yeah, exactly like that. 617-779-7937. How much do you trust the Kraft stewardship in the coming offseason here for the Patriots? The overwhelming majority right now, well, most of the majority, two-thirds of you say very little. 32% say some less than before, and just under 5% are saying a lot. I'm interested in who is saying a lot. I think if you take the totality of the Kraft's ownership here in New England, it's been very positive, and they've made some good hires, and they've had a lot of success, obviously. But I think at this point, it's weird. In a way, I kind of feel like the Hall of Fame thing is playing into this a little bit, just
probably.
His perception, his behavior, the desperation almost.
It
is
just
like,
becomes a bit of a sideshow when the main event already doesn't look good right now.
Right. The team's not good. It all ended in a very ugly way. There's been additional needling of Belichick on his way out the door. There was the documentary
the
and the
dynasty.
Books and the Stacey James cornering people in the bathroom at these parties and stuff. You know, like, I mean, it's been a whole thing going on and on and on. Sorry about that, Stacey, for listening. That was a bit of a cheap shot. But you know what I mean? Like, this has all been going on here for a while. And I think that's hurt his image in a lot of ways. And I also wonder, knowing that, as image conscious as Robert Kraft is, what do you think is going to be weighing more on his mind PR-wise? The idea of, I can't fire Gerard Mayo or move on from my head coach my second year because I made this big commitment to him, or the fans and everybody seems to have lost faith in this guy and I need to make a decision. Like, which one of those things do you think, from a PR perspective, the Kraft's may be leaning more towards?
Certainly the first one.
You think so?
Because I also think that they made such a big production out of how much they believe in Gerard Mayo to make him the guy, and that they decided it 5 years ago, and how many times did we hear that, that to change after 1 year would be a really bad look for them.
You would look incompetent. You would look stupid if you just moved
like
on from
the Jets.
Yeah, or worse, maybe.
I'm not saying that that's the right or wrong decision, but if you're asking me where their priority is, that's definitely where I think it would
be. I agree, because I don't know that that's the right decision to stick by him or not. Personally, from what I've seen through 14 weeks, I don't think that's the right decision to just stick by him, because I just don't think, unfortunately, and he may be a better head coach years from now, but he just doesn't have the experience to help usher this team forward. And
And do you feel like he's gotten better this year?
No, never.
Like, we talk about experience. Well, he doesn't have experience. He's getting experience now. Is it making him into a better coach?
No, and Mego and I talked a lot about this last week, where it's like, he just doesn't even have an identity. It's one thing to have your identity and then try to be building on that, like Dan Campbell did, right? Mm-hmm. He stunk at the beginning in Detroit. 3-13-1 was their record. Horrendous.
Everybody was laughing at
him. And then the second season, they started like 1-7. They were awful. And then, but the back half of that second season, they rattle off 8-10. And it's like, oh, you could see the pieces coming together.
Yeah,
oh, they drafted
they got an
well.
Offensive line.
Yeah, they drafted pretty well a couple times. And Dan Campbell, you know, put his personality on that team and they thrived under it. And now they're the best team in football. And so it's like, I don't even see any form of Jerod Mayo putting his imprint, his personality on this football team. And there's been zero improvement in him on the field from what I can see. The only person on the entire team that improves on a week-to-week basis seems to be Drake May. That's it. And I don't think that's with help from the coaches.
I would say one other person has improved, and that's Alex Van Pelt. Where I don't think Alex...
I think he's gotten better this year.
I agree with that. I think maybe it's not exactly...
Maybe marginally, but
week
sure.
To week, but he's certainly better... And part of that is probably playing Drake May.
Yep.
But he's certainly better in the second half of the sample that we've seen than the first half. But
I don't know if I call him like a top 15 OC in the league.
No,
I do
but
think
he
has gotten better. I agree with that.
He's also the most experienced of the bunch. And maybe not at play calling, but just being a coach in football, he is the most experienced guy
in
the building.
He's the most seasoned.
Yeah, and so maybe that's probably why you've seen at least a little bit of improvement from him compared to anybody else, because he knows how to make adjustments on a week-to-week basis. Like, he understands how he needs to improve, whereas other guys, I don't know that they have the introspection to be able to determine what they need to improve on personally.
Here's the other thing I'll say about Alex Van Pelt, and it's like kind of a bigger picture thing with him, not exactly just football. I don't feel like he gets distracted easily, where I think there were times at the beginning of the season, remember when he made that pivot from running the ball to all of a sudden like trying to have Jacoby Brissett air it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, what is that? Is he just like listening to what people are saying and reading? And that's a bizarre adjustment. But since then, I think that he's been like, I don't know.
He's very calm in his demeanor. It seems like the noise that
if you listen to Tom Curran's exclusive interview with Jerod Mayo, where he talks about noise and signals and all this stuff, it seems to me that that affects a lot of people down there right now. But Alex Van Pelt, and probably because of the experience he has and how seasoned he is, he's just kind of like, well, I'm making my adjustment this week, and this is what it is.
All right, 617-779-7937. Let's go to Bill in Arlington before we get to Fitzy, Tommy Curran, and our big slate of guests. Go ahead, Bill.
Oh, thanks for letting me on.
Yeah,
I think with the Kraft, it's an unfortunate situation, and I don't mean to be demeaning, but Bob Kraft is 82, is probably not as sharp as he was even 5 years ago. And Jonathan seems like he's in way over his head and trying to influence the football operations. And I think you're not going to get rid of Mayo for many reasons. And so I think we're kind of stuck with this for the foreseeable future. And I'm not confident it's going to get any better until the Crafts. I'm not saying that to sell the franchise. They're going to step aside, though. They don't know what they're doing with this football operation.
Well, Bill, I got bad news. They're probably not going to. I don't think so. I don't think they're going to be moving on from one of the most profitable teams in American sports. It's just very unlikely.
No, but they could let football people make the football decisions at some point.
I suppose they could.
They may kind of have to, by default, go to that because the decisions they've been making and may continue to make stink.
Yeah, that may happen. We'll see. I can tell you who may be against that is our next guest, Nick Fitzy Stevens, who will be joining us here in just a moment. Tom E. Curran coming up at the top of the hour. We'll have the inactives for you at 11:30. Storylines from the bye week. Andy Hart at 12:30 will pop, lock, and drop. And we have a special Patriots quiz in place of Wiggy's Keys today. Yes, we are off and running here. It is WEEI Football Sunday. Fitzy joins us next.
WEEI Football Sunday, Arcan, Mego, Shime Time, and joining us right now on the phone is your friend and mine, your old pal Fitzy, who on the bye week is not at the tailgate. And I was wondering, like, Fitzy, what is a bye week for Fitzy like? Here's what I was envisioning. You're back in the tailgate parking lot, but there's nobody there. It's just you and a big bag of like peyote buttons, and you're going on a vision quest to sort of go over like the past 13 weeks of Patriots football and to see ahead what the next month's going to be like. How close am I? Am I in the ballpark or what?
First of all, I was today years old when I figured out that Jacob Javon Lesnar would rejoin with freaking YYZ, one of the all-time Rush bangers. Way to get a bye week started, producer man. Second of all, I actually was not going to take this hit this morning. I was going to defer and have a bye week myself because I'm just exiting my own personal darkness retreat, Arkan. Uh-huh. I went into a cave for 3 days, just did a pile of ayahuasca, sat around, listened to EEI for a couple of days.
Was
and
there
just
a bucket?
Hole in the ground.
Yep. We had some slats. It was okay. You know, just you try. You know, I like the collagen peptides, Mego, so we keep it clean. And just took some time to meditate and reflect on the season. And I've been listening to Came Out of the Darkness Retreat about an hour ago. And if by darkness retreat, you mean my room at Mohegan Sun. I've been listening to the show this morning. And Shime, I'm so happy that you were continuing to bang on the drum that we started yesterday with the Patriots and Gerard Mayo. That's my biggest issue, Arkan. Like, what is the freaking identity of this team? What is Gerard Mayo's identity? What is the true North Star of this team? What direction are they headed? And who's going to be the one besides your awesome freaking rookie quarterback to lead us there?
Fitzy, when Gerard Mayo took this job, he talked a lot about how he wanted to be authentic to himself. So what identity for the football team do you think would make sense for Gerard Mayo's authentic self as you've observed him as a player and a coach and now head coach?
I would say intelligently apologetic.
Identity.
Yeah, a success. Well, the biggest, like, the biggest rope-a-dope, if you will, or like the foolish ones, shame on you, came week one because they come out and they start a street fight in Cincinnati and they play a ground-based, hard-hitting, bare-knuckle drag-out. You know, it was the football equivalent of the fight scene from the movie They Live. It was bloody, it was long, and it was successful. And we thought, okay, so maybe this team wins 5, 6, 7 games tops, Mego. But at least every week, they're going to go out there and they're going to fight for the logo. They're going to fight for the craft. They're going to fight for their teammates and they're going to fight for us. And then halfway through the Seattle game, they sort of lost the narrative and they got conservative. And since then, I feel like they've been in a jet wash of indecision trying to rediscover that identity. So I think right now, that identity is gone. You are now what Gerard Mayo and the New England Patriots need to be is they need to be, like I've said before on the Sunday 7 column at WEEI.com, shout out our guy John Lyons who filled in this week and did an awesome job. They need to be the Drake Matriots. They need to build their identity around this kid. Everything needs to be based around his talent, his persona, his affability, his running, his laser rocket arm, and everything else that he brings to the table because to sort of like try to do a page one rewrite based off Gerard Mayo, I think that would be a folly for the team.
Fitzy, in Patriots adjacent related news, there seems to be some
adjacent, yes.
Yes, there seems to be some rumors out there that not only has Bill Belichick talked to UNC, that there may be some contract negotiations in play. I used the word rumor and not scoop because I'm not entirely sure how much I would trust the source yet, but I would say rumors. We talked about this a lot yesterday, but I'm curious your thoughts upon hearing that.
I cannot love Belichick going back to school enough. I mean, we talked, I think last week on the postgame show, we talked about the fact that now that the Patriots don't have a rookie head coach heading into 2025 anymore, losing record, that Hard Knocks is officially on the table. And I bet you that the buzzards of NFL films will circle over Gillette next summer and it is going to be an absolute blank show. And I can't wait for it. Love it. Love all the extra entertainment. Shime, how entertaining, how great is like College Game Day is one of the best shows on television right now. Hands down, you got $250,000 kicks being made by dudes that are all hopped up on high noons that haven't slept all night. McAfee's singing and screaming, people stripping. Timothy Chalamet going like 6 for 6 on his picks. It's phenomenal. When they take College Game Day to the campus of Chapel Hill, one of the most beautiful, pristine campuses in the United States of America next year on Belichick's debut. Do you know what an electric scene that's going to be? Do you know how great he's going to make college football? The ACC battling to be the new SEC, the recruiting he's going to be able to do. Forget about all the NIL nonsense and everyone making jokes about, he's probably just taking a job so his girlfriend gets a discount at grad school. No, it's not all
that.
That
was one of the tamer jokes that I've made about Belichick on a college campus, Vinci, just for the record, but go on.
Oh, really? Belichick spotted at another sorority party? Wow. My God.
Foam party?
UNC is going to be the place to go. And I can't think enough of it also. And then, Shime, there's that legacy factor about that he wants Steve tied into the whole operation, that he's going to come work father and son. You know, once you have kids, you'd think just how incredible it would be to not only spend all the time like Belichick has talked about with them, but to work with them and then set them up for success, help blaze a trail. And then, you know, Steve can be like, I don't want your laugh, or he can actually take the gig and run with it. I think it would be phenomenal. That, to me, would be so much more interesting than, like, you know, good afternoon, everyone, from Everbank Field. It's Bill Belichick's Jaguars taking on the Colts. Yay. All right. I'm Chris Myers.
Fitzy, before we let you go here, we're hovering on the brink of another pick in the top five, or maybe top 10, depending on how it all shakes out here at the end. It hasn't been like this since the 90s. You remember the 90s and Patriots football very well. Are we back in the 90s with this team?
Oh, yeah. And it's not just because people keep saying, like, oh, yeah, we're going to finish with the same record as the Rod Russ Patriots. We got Gerard Russ now. No, there's more talent on this team. There are more positive signs. But, you know, the other day on the Six Rings pod, Hart and I had on Paul Perillo, and we wrapped on the question, really, I think one of the biggest questions that is circling around Pats Nation right now, Arcan, which is, how do you want to see the final four games go? What is an optimal situation? And, of course, everyone on social media and everyone with a cold, frosty bev in hand is going to be like, play a bunch of really competitive games, lose them all, and get the number one overall pick. All right, you might get lucky, and maybe somebody has one out for Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, and you can trade back and get a few extra picks. But Perillo said, in all honesty, you know, he is the Sith Lord Master Apprentice to Andy Hart, too. So to hear him talk like a fan again was such a delight. He said, I mean, you guys, I think, talked about it the other day on the
we
show,
did.
Dude, when he said, win all four. He's like, win all four. He took us back to 1993 and said, I was actually a fan back then. I was a season ticket holder, believe it or not. And they were 1-11 in Bledsoe's rookie season. And then, granted, the competition was a lot less stiff because the Pats have a wicked road to finish this season off. But the fact that he said, you know, they won all four games, and then we were all so fired up for next season. And then, of course, they go 10-6. They go to the playoffs. A lot of that was abled by that incredible turnaround in that 70-pass attempt game against Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But get out there and win. Go, like, let him, over these final four games, grip it and rip it, hang it high, let it fly, and give the fans, like, finish on a high note, so much so that we can't wait for next season so we can see Drake May, honest to God, with a real offensive line and elite weaponry around him.
That is the voice of Nick Fitzy Stevens. You can hear him all over WEEI. You can hear him on the Six Rings post-game show and the Six Rings podcast, both with Andy Hart. Fitzy, we appreciate it on the bye week. Thanks so much.
Hey, happy holidays, everyone, and have a stress-free football Sunday. Arcan, I'll talk to myself later.
All right, sounds good. It sounds good there, your old pal Fitzy. I cannot do a good Fitzy. Every time I try to do an impression of Fitzy, I sound like Dennis Miller, like a bad impression
you
of
do.
Dennis Miller.
You
it's
do.
I'm working on it, and the more I work on it, the more it sounds like
the
Dennis
worse
Miller.
It sounds.
It
yeah.
really, it's not
nice.
Getting any better, so I may just hang it up forever. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. When we return, we'll be joined by Tommy Curran. That's next.